You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
your life.
I'm running like a rare disease.
I'm running like a rare disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshie. Hotel family, hope everything is well with you today. It's Wednesday, and so I hope you can get over that hump and look towards a better day tomorrow. That's right. That's right. And I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it is not, and you know it has to get done, you will do it. And you will do it safely. That's right. We appreciate that. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But of course, if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcast. Click on that, the drop down, and you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed, from 6 to 8. And then from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and her daughter, Nataki Kamban. That is followed by from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers on Tuesdays. On Thursdays, from 7 to 9 on Thursdays, Melanin Live with host Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. Friday at 8 p.m. from 8 p.m. to 10. No, actually from 8 p.m. to whatever. Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday from 4 to 6 on Saturdays, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9 on Saturdays, the Sankofa Elders Council. Sunday, once again, it's Time for an Awakening at 7 p.m. on Sunday with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bamani Tayemba, has been taking our people to the trip of a lifetime. His trip next month, April 2nd through the 12th, going to Senegal and Gambia, and then in May, May 24th to June 5th, going to Ghana. And then November 18th through the 29th, Tanzania. And then followed by in December, December 24th to January 5th, 2022, going to Ghana. All these trips are affordable. Put a $400 down payment down, pay on it monthly, and by the time your trip is ready to go, there you will be. And everything on the website, AfricanForTheAfricans.org, is what you need to make this trip happen. Okay? All the information that you need is there. But if you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. AfricanForTheAfricans.org. I apologize. I didn't make that call to Renoco to get an update on what's happening. I will try to do that
Friday by Friday's program for sure to see what's happening. Habesha, HabeshaIncorporated.org. Go to HabeshaIncorporated.org and check out what's happening with Habesha. Habesha stands for Helping Africans by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad, and they are doing just that. Remember I said that we need schools. We need a curriculum that is controlled by us. We need teachers that have the best interests of our students at heart and to turn them into strong warriors. We need that. That's what we need. And, of course, Habesha has a couple of programs, and you know Habesha stands for. And their mission is a Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology. The programs are Habesha Works, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, and the Urban Green Jobs. And, of course, the project that is going ongoing in Africa, in Ghana, is the Kashi Project. And just beautiful. And it's going up, and it's beautiful. It's someplace that I know if I would go to Ghana, try to find out exactly where it is and go visit. Yeah, that's the thing. Ledge. Brothers and sisters, go to theledgegroup.com. Ledge, land for the environmental development of group economics. The Ledge has an agreement with the country of Tanzania. And if you are a member of the Ledge Group, you can buy land in Tanzania for $250 an acre. $250. If you got $1,000, you have 4 acres of land. And then you can, just for $1,000, imagine what you can do. You know, it's beautiful. Yeah. I plan to go to check it out for myself, believe me. And of course, the Ledge Group deals in the four areas of human activity, food, human necessity. The Ledge Group deals in four areas of human necessity, food, water, clothing, and shelter. They're in 12 different countries. Excuse me, they're in 6 different countries with 12 projects and 172 people employed with over 260 members, and they need more members. TheLedgeGroup.com. BBiaTumi.com. Go to BBiaTumi.com. ABIBITUMI.com. BBiaTumi.com. And it's, I like for it to be the number one they call that, just like YouTube or what all the other stuff. But we use BBiaTumi. That would be great. This Saturday, Obatala Kamban. It's a Saturday seminar series. United Snakes, Politicians and Prostitutions, and the Ghana United Snakes Military Agreement. In this detailed discussion, Obatala Kamban shows that from George Washington to Henry Kissinger, the United Snakes policy is one of the cold-blooded snake-like unilateralism. In this discussion, Obatala Kamban shows that from George Washington to Henry Kissinger, the United Snakes policy is one of cold-blooded unilateralism. We then present research on how the U.S. routinely violates treaties, pacts, and agreements, focusing on 3 case studies, the 1993 Chemical Weapons Convention, the 1963 Geneva Convention on Consular Relations, and the obligation to pay annual dues under the Charter of the United Nations, followed by numerous other treaty violations. We demonstrate that the United Snakes does not keep its word, and that this tradition continues with Trump and I'm quite sure with Biden. Through it certainly did not start with them, but I'm quite sure. We can conclude with the significance of U.S. treaty violations as a whole and the significance in this broader context of bargaining with a demonstratively unilateral rogue nation like the United Snakes. And for Ghana, her people, and her future, it is tough. It's a conceptual framework that needs to be discussed. Because not just Ghana, but other countries in Africa. And not just with United Snakes, to other countries that are in Africa that can do harm. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End, right across the street from the Soul Veg and down the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. I'm not sure if the Shrine is open on weekends. They were open on Fridays and Saturdays from 1 to 7 because, you know, they have an array of things in the Shrine. They got books, of course. They got furniture, clothing, gifts. You got it all. The Shrine of the Black Madonna. And, of course, Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Mama Nia has a new location open. Go check her out if you're in the Atlanta area. Right off of Georgia Highway 166. You can't miss it right off there. And but give her a call at 404-346-3263. 346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. My good brother Kazim Dejamu with the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore located in Lithonia. Give Brother Kazimde a call at 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107 in the great bookstore. He has his coffee bar is outstanding. I was there yesterday. Man, and he's getting more African coffees aside from Cameroon Boyo. So my good brother Kazimde is doing it. In fact, I even commented, his store, let's see, he's done some rearranging. And it looks bigger. I know it's the same space, but man, it looks great. You need to check him out. That's in Lithonia at 6984 Main Street in Lithonia. Give him a call at 404-519-8107. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Us Lifting Us. Their Thursday night broadcast on Blog Talk Radio. Go to blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The name of the program is Dare to Win. Every Thursday night at 9 p.m., from 9 p.m. to 10. If you want to call to listen, you can do that on Blog Talk Radio. But you also can call to give questions, comments, or concerns at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us, Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people. In the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Also, too, dear brothers and sisters, the Us Lifting Us Convention is going to take place virtually this weekend. It's taking place this weekend. Go to usliftingus.com. Go to Us Lifting Us. And that's not ULU, go to us, spelled out, usliftingus.com, and check out the convention, register for it, be a part of what's happening. It's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Us Lifting Us, one of the keynote speakers is Ariel Harone with the Sovereign Psyche, one of the keynote speakers. I think he'll be speaking on Friday. I'm pouring libation on Friday as well. So please, brothers and sisters, check it out, usliftingus.com. This Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, their conference is going to happen. Sun Goddess Scents, your number one natural shop, located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, booth number 225. And for more information, call our sister Shelly Amonset at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. I heard a commercial that the sister did is great. I would love to play that on here. I'm going to try to find a way to do that. But yeah, Sun Goddess Scents, your number one natural stop shop. Your stop natural shop located in Forest Park inside the International Discount Mall. Booth number 225. Sanjay Dash Haiti, Sister Gabriella, really a good job that she's doing. Check her out on sanjay-haiti.org in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. Go to Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E-Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. Sanjay-Haiti. Akaban Institute, Baba Barudi, Mama Ya Barudi, please support them. Make your check or money order out to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Of course, you can use PayPal and Cash App. On the Cash App, just a $ Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. Also, too, you can get books. You know, it's Baba Baruti's a prolific writer. Go to AkabinHouse.com, AkabinHouse.com, and get the books. Check it out and get the books that you feel you want to check out, that you want to read. That's right. The Enye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Of course, the Enye Sesem is something that I, you know, every time I read it, and every time I have a program and I read it, it seems like it's always hitting the mark. The Enye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. March 9th. Black people are righteous by nature and are other than righteous by circumstance. Khaled Muhammad. In an effort to weaken our front line, menticidal agents have worked to strengthen a movement which would sever the natural connection for warriors between promises made and promises kept. A concerted effort has been put into removing any negativity associated with one's character when striking contradictions are found between his or her public and private lives. Our ancestors judged leadership, whether potential or actual, on the quality of the family relationships and how one treated his or her spouse, children, and relatives. However, in order to weaken the definition of moral and or political immaturity could fit, these menticidal agents are known for ignoring or dismissing behaviors which would commonsensically be considered unwarrior-like by using he who has thrown the first stone argument. This contradiction cannot be allowed to subvert the African sovereignty movement because the cultivation of good character is one of the foremost priorities of anyone standing in the center. We recognize that a person's ability to keep his or her word was a fundamental quality among Africans traditionally, and they are who we are for working to become. A handshake would suffice for an agreement. Those who consistently did not keep their word were held in contempt. Of course, the quality of paperless pacts has deteriorated because of the decline in our enforcement powers as a result of embracing an externally validated, selfish, extremely individualism. Regardless of why, it must be returned if we are to correctly nation build. Affirm, I am creating a righteous reality. Affirm, I am creating a righteous reality. Brothers and sisters, we must be men and women of our word. Brothers and sisters, we must develop the good character to be known to be trustworthy, to know that we can be depended on. These things are necessary. These things are vital for us as a people. March 10th. We have relinquished our obligation to respond to various crises of our people to the point that we are too paralyzed to plan for immediate and prolonged range crises. We are confused around this issue because a decision to prepare ourselves challenges by its nature the present power structure. We must become psychologically committed to this idea that wherever we are, whatever we are doing, at any time when our people's lives are in danger as a result of a natural disaster or unnatural crises, we will come to their aid. We must prepare and organize in anticipation of these possibilities. Mutulu Shakur. Often by the time potentially conscious sleepers learn to think and to listen for the rumblings of the mindless, apocalyptic zombie-attic, pale desert storm raging our collective spirit, it is too little, too late. Watching for signs of the awakening of a genuine, motivated concern among the formerly vanquished is beyond painful. Watching their belated anguish reactively unfold and mature at the sight of a realization of a preventable but now more entrenched chaos is beyond painful. Listening to their newfound frustrations and uncloaked rage dissipates into the darkness of their disbelief and defeat is beyond painful. and knowing that fear and ignorance await the weakest among them, only a few nods away goes far beyond even this. It is very painful, the lack of our ability to prepare and to wake up. Affirm, I am psychologically committed to the idea that wherever I am, wherever I am doing, at any time when our people's lives are in danger as a result of natural disaster or unnatural crises, I will come to their aid. Affirm, I am psychologically committed to the idea that wherever I am, whatever I'm doing, at any time when our people's lives are in danger as a result of a natural disaster or unnatural crises, I will come to their aid. The Inye Sesim of daily revolutionary thought, preparing our warriors to handle the business that needs to be done to change these dynamics. Our guest today, brothers and sisters, is my good friend, Brother Franklin Jones, better known as the Black People's Matrix. Brother Franklin Jones, how are you this morning?
It's always an honor to be on your show. No, fantastic.
That's great, man. I appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity.
I would like to take 2 minutes to open with these words.
Sure.
The greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. It is the illusion of knowledge, because an ignorant person might continue to seek knowledge, but a person with a false knowledge, believing it's true, stops searching, therefore remains mentally enslaved. Every time we come together in this format, we come with these different ideologies, and it puts us at odds with each other. We tend to bring our ego, and we're arguing to defend different ideologies. This is by design. Our oppressors spread many misinformation into our community that are designed to keep us divided. Okay? But we must learn the truth of our condition. You know, usually people have a right to believe whatever they want to believe. However, there's an exception to this rule when it comes to the oppressed. When the beliefs held by the oppressed are false ones that hinders their liberation, those false beliefs must be exposed and eradicated. We must gain a clear and accurate understanding of our plight and condition in order to liberate ourselves. Because if our understanding is flawed, then all remedies that stem from those misunderstandings will also be flawed. We come together, and many of us argue that our plight is connected to a Bible that was brutally forced upon our ancestors and passed down to us. The fact is that such a premise is a stupid one. There are those of us who believe that our plight is the result of a slave syndrome, a William slave syndrome. That premise is born out of ignorance, because that's not how you brainwash a people. Brainwashing a people requires a system that's being continually reapplied upon the mind, which if not, it would lessen with each new generation. The fact that African Americans were calling us our brothers and sisters in the 1960s and calling ourselves niggers today, that's not a lessening of our minds. That shows that there's another system in place. Many of us believe that our condition of division and calling ourselves niggers as a result of slavery. We believe that the fact that many African Americans prefer to be called a nigger than an African is a result of slavery. That is untrue. Our condition is a result of what was implemented in 1968 against us. And this is proven, because during the 1930s Ethiopian war, thousands of African Americans signed up to go and fight in defense of Ethiopia against Italy. When asked why, the African Americans said it was our duty to fight for Mother Africa. During the 1960s, African Americans were wearing dashikis, afros, and giving themselves African nicknames. Today, we say we'd rather be called a nigger than an African. Our condition is not connected to slavery. This is a modern system. We are under a system that was implemented in 1968. That's what we're here to talk about. Oh, my brother.
All right, man. All right. Great opening. And as I hope, as you brothers and sisters are listening, you can join this conversation by dialing 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. And of course, those who are already on, you hit star twice to join this conversation with me and, of course, our guest, Brother Franklin Jones, the Black People Matrix. We're going to talk today about Black people. Your entire perception of reality is an elaborate white deception, an elaborate Caucasian deception, European deception. And you know what, Brother Franklin, it brings to mind, and, you know, and I'm really tired of this, of the Oprah interview with Meghan Markle and her husband. I'm really tired of it. Number one, I can't stand the British.
Yes.
You know, the hypocriticalness of the British and talking about, you know, there's no racism in the...
Yes, it's amazing that they're acting shocked about it.
Yeah.
Because the British, the colonized and colonized. You know,
yeah.
The history of racism comes out of the Great Britain.
Yes.
We know this.
Yes.
Remember the monarchy.
So yes.
It's ridiculous to say we don't have a problem with racism, you know.
No.
You know, it's ridiculous.
You know, in fact, when you look at the deepest of the colonizers, and they were all bad out of coming out of Europe, but probably Britain was most, because they were most vicious in terms of what they did to the people,
mm-hmm.
what they did in India, of course what they did in Africa, definitely what they did. But everywhere else they have gone through the sanction of the British monarchy.
So,
you know, what they're trying to do is, you know, say that the British laws and so forth are different than the British monarchy. No, all of it was sanctioned by the British monarchy. What they did, it was financed by the British monarchy. In fact, you know, I was reading the other day about the British Commonwealth. What a damn joke. The British Commonwealth. There's nothing in common with what the British have done to those people who they exploited.
Yes.
You know, and continue to exploit. You know, so
this
deception.
In fact,
go ahead.
In fact, my family, my ancestors were enslaved under the British.
Mm-hmm.
The ship brought my family off to the Caribbean islands in the Bahamas, and they were under British rule. They were enslaved by the British, and the city of Freeport, where all the wealth was, where all the white people lived. And then at 7 p.m., all the black history after slavery was over, we had to go and live in the poor section. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely connected to the monarch, the racism that they impose. And they even control the education system in the Bahamas, where many Bahamians, African Bahamians, are totally ignorant of their true history. They've been given a false version of history that makes them... not feel resentment towards Great Britain. Says, yes, we've all been socialized, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I would like to say something. The reason why it is so important that we understand the current system that they're using against us, because they're going to continue using it until we understand and develop counter strategies against it. They're planning on using this for protecting their white dominance. There is a science that is used for maintaining white dominance and for long-term oppression of a people. And they're implying it upon us. And this particular system, they discovered this in 1968. Social scientists were hired to study the African-American community, to understand the reason for the unprecedented black protests. So they hired these social scientists to thoroughly study the African-American community and to find remedies. And they found that the reason for the collective black unified protest, there were two significant reasons. One was because it was due to a elevated and unifying collective black self-esteem brought on by the emergence of the Black Pride movement. So they logically determined that they could suppress black rebellion by keeping the black collective self-esteem low. This is why they keep bombarding us with negative information about ourselves. The goal is the lower our collective self-esteems are, the easier it is to control us. And so this is why when you watch the news, and if you pay attention, you'll notice that in the white media, you never hear negative generalizations about white people, and you never hear positive generalizations about black people. All study results you hear favors whites over blacks. This is being done to indoctrinate a value system into our minds that makes us more compliant with white dominance over our lives. Here was the second thing the social scientists discovered in 1968. They discovered that while the white society with their weaponry at advantage of guns and cannons, were able to enslave the Africans, invade Africa, and steal Africa's resources. They could not maintain a relationship with Africans globally unless our minds were socialized. Because whenever a people are oppressed for long terms, their collective aggressions against the oppressors will continue to swell until acts of rebellion becomes inevitable. That's what they saw in the 1960s. So they decided, they realized they had to shift our collective aggressions away from the white society and redirect it against ourselves. This is why we have so many black people walking around believing that we are our own worst enemies. We've been constantly demoralized, and then once we start being demoralized, we start demoralizing ourselves. When black people, for example, insist that blacks don't read, we are in a system where there are social scientists and propaganda designers, and it's programming, it's in the media we see, it's in the education we're taught. We are being socialized to think in ways that benefit the white society. And we have to gain a clear understanding standing of this in order to liberate ourselves, because we've normalized it. When our children go to their schools, they're being given a curriculum that hides the majority of their contributions. Black students are taught that they had no history before slavery, that they had no significant history before the colonization of Africa. This is designed to instill that we feel indebted to the white society. We feel slavery benefited us. We believe colonized benefited us. We have to recognize that when the oppressed thinks exactly as the oppressors wants them to, it's by design. And we walk around normalizing this, but this is not normal. For example, in America, we'll have these black people who said, we talk about slavery. They'll say, well, we were the only slaves. You have black people defending slavery. You have black people defending white racism. This mindset, what we see, and we just, I think we dismiss them and call them coons and walk away. We have to recognize that this mindset is by design. Everything that they do is a social science. I will give you an example. Many of us complain by the fact that they continually make Egyptians white in their movies, in their books. But there's a science behind the reason why, a social science, of why the Egyptians are white. Now, I believe you have to understand what's being done, because we're just saying they keep making them white, they keep making them white. You have to understand what's being going on. White social scientists theorizes that a people's, in order for a people to have an inspiring future, they must have an inspiring past. Because according to the theory, people reference their future capabilities based upon the history they're taught to believe by themselves. So to give white society an inspiring path that inspires their future, they've stolen Africa's great history of Egypt and falsely portrays it as theirs. So the self-esteem and self-efficacy of whites are being built, while the self-esteem and self-efficacy of blacks are being demeaned by this misinformation. The fact is this, we know that Egypt is located in Africa. We know that the pyramids, the kingdom, was built thousands of years before the Europeans and the Arabs arrived in the 7th century. We also know in 2012 and 2013, DNA analysis conducted on Tutankhamun, Pharaoh Ramses III, Pharaoh Ramses IV, and several other mummies confirmed that they were Africans. They matched the sub-Saharan Africans. But the white society, even though this came out in 2012, the white society has not changed their textbooks to reflect that they were Africans. They didn't start casting black actors as Egyptians. They kept things going because the story that they were Europeans was never based upon facts. It's being done to give white society an inspiring past. They can't teach white people that the ancient history was in a cave. They can't teach them that. They can't teach them that it was the Africans who introduced the bath to them. So they've been given an entire false version of history that is used to lift the collective self-esteem of whites, and that their self-esteem is built upon the backs and self-esteem of blacks. For example, they teach us that as we go on, even in our education system, it's all by design. you think that Thomas Edison invented the light bulb. He's the one who lived the world. That is completely a total lie. You believe that the white guy invented the first car, but the first automobile was invented by a black man named C.W. Patterson. It is not coincident that we are functioning off of lies. We are functioning off of misinformation. This distorted reality benefits the white society and it's against black people. Now, people say, how can someone distort your perception of reality? It's rather easy. Society does not function based upon facts nor reality. Society functions based upon the narratives that are fed into a society. Those who control these narratives control the interpretation of reality. White people control all the narratives, and they keep feeding into our society false white exalting narratives and false black marginalizing narratives. And our society functions based upon these narratives.
Because they have control. Because they have control of imagery. They have control of the technology. They have control of mass communications.
Yes.
They have control of all of these things.
Yes.
And of course...
In fact, some black people hate this fact. But here's the deal. White people owns black people's interpretation of reality. White people owns black people's interpretation of themselves. Every narrative about black people comes from white people. We can't dispute it. We can't fact check it. They tell us who we are, and they impose those narratives upon us as facts. But they do this to maintain their dominance.
And see, what's problematic for us is that the leadership that we had to question this, of course, did not get the notoriety, not necessarily the notoriety, but did not get heard by the mass of our people. It's always been on a fringe. It's always been on the outside. The mass media or the mass control has been directed by Europeans to maintain and sustain the privilege that they created for themselves.
I like what you just said. I like what you said. Because, like I said, everything you say in terms of our oppression, I can show you it's a science. What you just said, I'm going to show you it's a science. In the 1960s, the FBI realized that it was by giving African leaders a national platform in the media that their following grew, that the popularity grew, they became more powerful. So now the white society does not give a national media platform to true black liberators. When they put a black person to speak, that's one of their coons. This is what was meant when J. Edgar Hoover said, there will not be another black messiah unless we created them. Because now what they do, they realize that's why we have this perception. Many people say there are over 55 million black people in America. And they walk around saying, how come we don't have another Malcolm X? Why is there no more Dr. King's? If you believe that there's among our 55 million, there's not a black person who can stand on a national platform and articulate our plight, you've been brainwashed. There are millions of Malcolm X and Dr. King still among us. But the white society have recognized that when you have those people, they're described as agitators. You do not give the agitator a national platform. You put your coons in a national platform. Just like, for example, they killed Dr. King, and then they used his image of peace as a role model for us to follow. Dr. King wants you to be peaceful. The white man is always using propaganda. And we are buried under 400 years of propaganda. So how do we liberate ourselves from it? We start studying the white man's tactics. Once you start studying the tactics, you know the lies when you see it. When you start studying his tactics, you understand when you see that your mind is being shaped to think in ways that benefits the white society, you understand you're under his program. They have created this system and they have to. And here's another reason why they have to keep the system going. Not only because of their brutal mistreatment of us throughout history, but their continued exploitation of Africa's natural resources, they're still doing it every day.
That's right.
They cannot sustain there without Africa's resources. So they're using propaganda, propaganda.
Yeah. Well,
reason why many Africans are now saying African Americans don't like us, or Africans don't like us, this interpretation that divides us, those of us who don't critically think never notice our mental change. The African Americans interpretation of Africans is seeing through a white media. The Native African interpretations of African Americans is also seeing through a white control media. They control how we see each other. And if you're not a critical thinker, you've already been brainwashed.
Well, see, here, you know, here again, it in the 60s, you mentioned this, that in the early part or latter part of the 50s, in the early part of the 60s, we were still Negroes. We were still trying our best. And we were just about, you know, this is the civil rights movement time. This is marching. This is demonstrating. This is trying to make sure that we had public accommodations and we could have fair housing and so forth, you know. But as the 60s went on, it became the Black Power movement. And we wanted independence. We wanted our own, you know, the formation of the Republic of New Africa and various other more radical, you know, organizations. So we started burning some cities down.
Yes, Newark. Unprecedented, yes.
Yes, Newark,
all
Chicago.
Collective aggression, on a scientific, on a social science term, our collective aggression against the white society had reached a boiling point. So that's why when they studied us, they realized that they had to shift our collective aggression against ourselves.
Exactly. And so here's what happened. The Kerner Commission was commissioned by Johnson. And the Kerner Commission's recommendation was that you have two societies.
Yes.
Unequal and hostile, you know. Mm-hmm. And the remedy to that was, of course, mass funding of programs that would bring some kind of equity to the society. Yes. Of course, they weren't going to do that. And they didn't do that.
Johnson denied it. He said no.
No. No, that's not a remedy that we want.
Yes, no, because although the white government professes equality for all races, they are secretly unrelentingly committed to the preservation of their white dominance. Therefore, to create a system where black people truly get equality, they see it as the erosion of white dominance. So this is why throughout history they've always had different systems behind the scenes. Their objective is to preserve white dominance and control.
And see, and that's why, and they don't want competition because they know in a fair fight, whatever area, whatever realm that is in, they get their ass whooped. So they don't want a fair fight. They want to manipulate everything to their advantage. And so coming out of the 60s, we got rid of the processes, we got rid of the Negroisms, and we became brothers and sisters, as you said. But then they said, we got to do something about that. And I've mentioned this a number of times on the on this program when I sat in the firehouse reading an article in the daily paper in Milwaukee during Jimmy Carter's administration, which, of course, was the latter part of the 70s, talking about Zygmunt Brzezinski. We must do everything possible to prevent Africans on the continent and Africans in the diaspora from coming together. Because if they did, they would control the resources that we want, that we need. So
you said something a minute ago, and it's everything you say, I see it in a science term, and I'm going to say something. You said we used to call it your brothers and sisters. Words have power over the subconscious mind, okay? When we started calling us our brothers and sisters, this unified us. You care more. If you see a man beaten, that you call your brother, you care more for him. If you see a woman being mistreated, you call your sister, you care more. Words have power. They used to media social engineering. They steered our culture away from calling us our brothers and sisters to now calling ourselves niggers and bitches. Now, the proof that words have power, it's throughout history. Like, you know, I retired from the military. In the military, when I was a drill sergeant, when we teach, we're training the soldiers to fight, to kill, we never call the
enemy.
We only call them enemies. Those are the enemies. In fact, during the when soldiers were torturing the enemies, many American soldiers had a hard time during the Japanese war torturing them. So they taught the American soldiers to call them chinks, goose, japs. When they call them those names, they dehumanized them, and it made it easier to torture them. Even if you listen to a black man, if a black man is talking about another black man he accosted, he brutalized, he stole from, He's not going to say, I stole from that brother. I did it. He's going to say, man, I took that nigga stuff. I did it to that nigga. I beat that nigga up. Man, that nigga ain't nothing. The word nigger is being used to dehumanize each other. This is why they socially engineered us to call stuff niggers. Those of us who say we made nigger our own word, they are ignorant of their own ignorance. It was white propagandists that created the narrative that we made nigger our own words. And it was white social scientists through media social engineering. How was that done? Most people think that the media reflects our reality. This is not the case. People often imitate those derogatory media depictions of themselves that they accept as being their realities. So once they started making those 1960s movies, our black children, we started watching those movies and we start imitating what was on the screen, which included calling ourselves niggers. They steered our culture away from the Black Pride movement.
Yeah, you could see that in the 70s with the black exploitation movies, yeah. Even the titles of movies, Nigga Charlie, Nigga,
yeah.
Nigga this, Nigga
this. Nigga Come to Harlem.
Yeah.
We were being conditioned.
Yeah.
But just for the second, when we call ourselves niggers, those who said empowers us are fools. Calling ourselves niggers, psychology assigns us to a subordinate status in the white society
and
to dehumanize each other.
And then we, of course, we made nigger an acronym, N-I-G-G-A, never ignorant, getting goals accomplished. Well, I'm going to say this. If that was truly the case, if we were not ignorant and we were getting goals accomplished, I'd be saying nigga every damn day. But that is not the case.
No, it's not the case. In fact, I'm going to tell you something about that. Like I said, everything I said to you is a science. There's a science behind it all. White propagandists often introduce sound like N words into our community, like niggers, which is the Ethiopian word for king. Okay?
Nigas.
However, and then nigga, you said. However, and there are over 2,000 languages in Africa. And each of those 2,000 languages, have at least three to four meanings for the word king. But the only one we're hearing is niggas. Here's what's really being done. The white propagandists spread these sound-like words into our community to keep us functioning based upon the original nigger programming because the subconscious mind doesn't see the different spelling. A nigger, by any spelling, is still a nigger because the subconscious mind doesn't see it. Ask yourself, watch the behavior of those who call themselves nigger by any spelling. It is the same behavior. Watch, for example, those who sag their pants. Most black people who sag their pants self-identify themselves as niggers. Also, you would find that those black people who refuse to call themselves niggers tend to carry themselves with a high degree of self-respect. Also, in America, there are millions of African Americans who hate the N-word. But
I'm one. Let me say this to you, because truly, words have meaning. And I've been saying this a lot. That's why I don't say black. I say African. You know, and there's a lot of words. In fact, I did a program a year or so ago on words have power or words have meaning. Because not power, because power is the ability to define reality, you know, and you can shape it and fashion that reality, you know, for your image and interest. And I can talk about that on another day. But words. So when we use these words, it conjures up an image and a meaning. That's why, to me, we need to redefine the words in this society and not let Europeans dictate it, because it's just like the word slave. You hear it all the time, and it bothers the hell out of me that we continue to call ourselves slaves. We do. We should never call ourselves slaves. We should call ourselves what happened to us and what we were. We were captives, and they are captors. It begins to give a different connotation and it also begins to give you a different visualization of who we are. You see?
Because right.
even though you see them all the time in these movies and in pictures and other depictions, you know, the bottom line is we were not slaves. Not even by the definition. The definition of a slave is something or somebody who submits its will to a master. Oh, master, I am your slave. No, we never submitted. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting in this hemisphere. And we continue to fight today. So no, we were not slaves. We were captives.
The same can be said for the word minority.
Yes.
You know, they use the word minority and the root word is minor. and they apply the word minority among the people of color, there is a sense to create a subordinate by placing the word minority upon us. The science to liberate ourselves, they're not teaching it in our schools. They're not teaching it in our universities. It's hidden from you. But to find it, to learn it, you study social science and propaganda. Mm-hmm. Once you start studying social science, you'll start to see what's being done. You'll be able to see things. Like, for example, I remember when I knew that they was going to kill Muammar Gaddafi 6 months before they killed him. And because I saw the trend, I saw they dedicated propaganda campaign just to denigrating his image.
Yeah.
I saw 40 minutes of just denigrating him.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, every day on all the time on the evening news.
Yeah.
You know, so you other publications
what they were doing.
Right. You were setting them up.
What they were doing.
They were setting us up. They were setting the public up to say, like, Muammar Gaddafi is an evil dictator.
Yeah.
You know, he's only benefiting his family and himself and enriching himself with the oil reserves of Libya. Muammar Gaddafi is spreading terrorism around the world. And so you had the United States, you had Britain, and you had France. Those three countries particularly, who were designed to go ahead and put this propaganda out consistently to kill Muammar Gaddafi. And the number one reason, because he was going to introduce a gold coin to Africa. He was ahead of the African Union. And had he done that, would have been a benefit to the continent of Africa and many other countries. But these Negroes.
Hurting the West. It would definitely hurt the West.
Seriously.
Like I say, everything I can show you is a science. What they did to Gaddafi was a tactic known as manufactured consent. They manufactured societal consent to kill him. You vilify his character. You start putting out all these fraudulent propaganda. And that's when you saw, okay, they're getting ready to kill him. The white man's propaganda, for example, I want to give this system is a very effective system. And that's what we have to understand. I'm going to give you a most simplest understanding of this. I am a sheriff in a local county, and I want to get more weapons from my men. I want to get some body armor. I want to get some more high-powered weapons. Now, I know if I go out and just ask for this money, they're not going to give it to me. But if I create propaganda saying that my men are being outmatched by criminals, if I create propaganda saying that my men are being attacked, the criminals are getting worse. Once I put this propaganda out into the county, and I said, okay, I need weapons, I need more stuff, they'll say, okay, give it to them. Because my propaganda campaigns created a societal setting that made what I needed to do more accepting. The same system of manufactured consent, it's what they did to black people in America in terms of why we are so vilified. Many people come to America from like Arabs, different countries, and look down at Americans. So why they come to America looking down at African Americans? Because there is a propaganda campaign vilifying the African American image. Now, here's why this was deemed necessary. During the 1960s, again, African Americans started getting global support. There was a shifting of victimization where the moral judgment went on the side of African Americans. It was for this reason why Dr. King was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, which totally embarrassed the U.S. government. So white oppressive forces realized that to mistreat black people, they now have to manufacture consent for the mistreatment of black people. So they continue to vilify our image, criminalize our image. This is what created the setting where cops simply routinely kill black people and walk away because they say they were afraid of their lives. They dehumanize us to make others insensitive to our plight. We are in a sophisticated system of racism. And what they've done, they've had our focus towards the Klansmen, our focus towards the skinheads, our focus towards the Nazis. But we're not seeing the social scientists and propagandists who are working unwittingly behind the scenes.
And working for the government. And working for the government of the United States as well as
the
governments of Europe.
Yes.
Once again, you're... Yes. See, you're... I mean, excuse me. Once again, European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is a global phenomenon. It happens across the world. The same thing that happens here, it happens in other parts of the world, in what is now called Australia, what is now called New Zealand, what is now called Central and South America. It happens the same way. Giving Europeans an image of good and prosperous.
I like what you said. You know? Everything you say is a science. And I'm going to prove what you said, and I'm going to show people how.
Well, I'm going to tell you what you're going to do. You're going to hold that because we're going to go to a break. And when we come back for the break, I want you to hit that particular point, and we'll take some calls and get others in on this conversation. I appreciate it, my brother. Brothers and sisters, we have as our guest today, who has been on many programs and had his own program and should have again, and that is Brother Franklin Jones, the Black People's Matrix. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You know, I want to play this, Brother Franklin. This is a piece that talks about what this program is about. This program is about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. And we need to come together as one. This is coming from the piece I got from the Pan-African Federalist Movement. Mama Nabantu sent me this particular piece. And I want to play this. It's not very long, and it's very insightful. I haven't played it in a couple of weeks. That's why I want to get it in. This Friday, my guest is going to be Brother Bashir Muhammad Akinyele. He is an educator out of Newark, New Jersey, and a ASCAC member, as myself, and he is a prolific writer. His articles appear in Your Black World, as well as Atlanta Black Star and various other publications. So I'm looking forward to this conversation. When we tried to do this about a month or so ago, we had some technical difficulties. You know, we were bumped off the server. So I'm hoping and praying that that doesn't happen this time. But here's a piece about why we need to come together.
There is a lot of talk of late on the African continent about the fact that Africans are awaking. There is a lot of talk about the fact that we are woke. But the question that I'd like to ask you is, almost 100 years ago, a man called Marcus Garvey rose and told Africans that they must unite. Unite in their control of resources. Unite as nations. Unite their imaginations, their dreams, aspirations, and capabilities to grow in Africa and a race that will be able to self-determine and compete against other races. A man called Kwame Nkrumah came and said the same message. And another by the name of Malcolm X said the same. But the question is, after almost a century since the rise of Marcus Garvey, has Africa achieved unity? Do we control our resources? Do we unite in our aspirations, dreams? And have we elevated Africa into a continent and a race that can compete and self-determine against other races? The truth of the matter is we have failed. We have failed because we have remained divided. We've continued to work as 54 different states that continue to be subjugated. This is why the French continue to have 14 colonies on the African continent. It is why 36 African countries have got American bases and AFRICOM on their soil. It is why many African countries continue to sell their resources, their institutions, for debt to countries like China. And the question that I'm now challenging you, the woke generation, with is, what are we going to do about it? The reason we've got wars on the African continent is because we're being divided for conquest. The reason we've got sanctions on the African continent is that all the independent knowledge and education, the power to take control of our resources, can be destroyed so that Africa can continue to be colonized by our Western colonizers. This is why now we need to rise. Remember that you, the African American, with all your paper money, the greatest wealth among all black nations, only have paper money, but the true wealth is in Africa. The true wealth is the reason why Africa is under sanctions and war, the one that Europeans want to keep for themselves. You need to bring your paper money, your skill, your knowledge, your frustration back to Africa to invest it in the control of real wealth and real resources in the form of the oil, the diamonds, chrome, lithium, cassiterite, and all the other resources that the Western worlds are fighting to control in Africa. Your paper money can be leveraged into machines, skills, technology, and the knowledge that Africa needs in order to move and prosper. You, the Caribbean, with your skill, power, determination. You, the Jamaican, the first people to resist European colonialism. You, the Haitian, the very first black peoples to defeat a European army. You are the answer to Africa's problems. You, the European African, with all that you've learned and earned, the basketball player, the soccer player, the sportsman, the singer, the musician, the actor, with all your billions of dollars, are the investment that Africa needs to stop its dependency on the colonizer. It's about time that we rose. And I'm saying that Marcus Garvey's dream can be fulfilled, because when he dreamt it, not a single country, not a single African country was independent. When he dreamt it, not many black billionaires existed, if any. But today we've got black billionaires. Today the richest man in Africa is a black man. We have what it takes and the capacity that it takes to grow our continent into being a continent that can be respected, can self-determine, control its resources, control the processing of those resources, and create currencies based on those resources to be the leading economy in the world. With that, we can industrialize, grow up the technology curve, and begin to create the machinery, the tools to defend the sovereignty of this continent. And now I say it's time that we unite. We have countries like Zimbabwe under U.S. war sanctions to make it unattractive for any African to come, because Europeans are preserving it for themselves. But I'm inviting you, my African-American brother, you Africans in the diaspora, you Africans on the continent, to say, come and take advantage of the greatest reserves of lithium, chrome, gold, true wealth, land, an opportunity to develop infrastructure for us to create wealth as a people, for yourselves, for the advancement of Africa. The time to awake is now, but awakening takes action, pride, investment, development, innovation, to give our people power. This is the time.
The time is now. The time is right now.
You know, throughout history, those nations that were brutally oppressive have always manipulated the minds of the oppressed to think in ways that benefit the dominant society. Therefore, the perceptions held by the oppressed are never theirs. They're always falsehoods beneficial to the oppressors that have been indoctrinated into their minds. If for black liberation to happen, we must overcome the white man's monopoly over our minds. And to do this, we have to study and learn tactics and then develop our counter strategies against it. This is what we must do. Now, on your segment, right before you went off, you started talking about how Caucasians grandize themselves. And you gave me a segue, you provided a segue for me, where I can show people how perception and reality is totally different. Throughout history, Caucasians have demonstrated a total disregard for the human lives of non-whites. Their subjugation, murder, exploitation of all other racial groups is unparalleled. All other races have been their victims. Against people of color, they've committed crimes against humanity, genocide, raping of men, women, and children, enslavement. Yet, in spite of this brutal history to the contrary, Caucasians are most often perceived as being the racial group of the highest ethics and moral standing. And black people are often perceived as being the group of the least moral standings and ethics. Now you're sitting there and listening, and you know what I just said is a fact. I told you the history of Caucasians, and I told you the reality of existence. It does not match. It does not match. And we both know this. It's because our society is not functioning based upon fact nor reality. It is functioning based upon those white exalting narratives that are fed into our society. And they vilify black people and marginalize black people, and our society functions based upon it. Now, according to a William propagandist, truth is not important. True power lies in what's perceived as true. Perception is greater than reality. So the white society creates an illusion, a false reality that exalts them and marginalizes us. For example, many white people walk around and they feel a sense of superiority because they've been given a false version of history. They've been taught, black achievements were given to them. Black inventions were given to them. Our ancient African history of Egypt was given to them. It is a falsehood. If you start studying true African history, you would know that there is the ruins of a great wall in Africa that is three times larger than the Great Wall of China. If you start studying your true history, you will know that the first mathematical tools came out of Africa. The oldest manuscripts. But we have people walking around with a PhD who think that Africans were ignorant and we have no history. Walking with a PhD. I was talking to a surgeon a couple years ago. This man was a surgeon. He had a Mercedes, a nice home. He's doing well. But he told me, sometimes, Frank, I feel inferior. He said, I feel inferior. Like I'm somehow lesser than the other white doctors. It's because he is, even though the education he gives doesn't free his mind from the belief that he is inferior. We have to understand that there are people. Okay, every government has two faces, two sides. There's the public persona, and then there is the what they call a shadow government. And many of the objectives of the shadow government the public never hears about. And every white government is unrelentingly committed to preserving their white dominance. And there also exists an immense fear of massive black retribution. This immense fear of black retribution and this commitment to maintaining white dominance results in them using propaganda to always program our minds. The propaganda starts in our school systems when our minds are young and most impressionable. When we finish school, the propaganda is in our media. We're continually being bombarded with information that instills a value system into the minds of black people that protects white supremacy. This is why now, if we try to speak for our rights, a black person will fight us to defend white supremacy. Mm-hmm. A black person will call right now and attack us for talking this way because their minds have been socialized. The problem is most black people have never even heard the word socialized. Most of us don't even know what's being done to us. And we contribute to the problem because we call ourselves good parents because our minds have been socialized. We send our children to schools to receive a white education that teaches them that they're less. For most black people at school, that first place, they begin to feel there's something less about being black. And all we concern is our children are getting A's and B's. Rather than going out and learning our true history and teaching our children how their minds are being socialized so they can develop resistance against the socializing. And if it didn't work, the white man wouldn't be putting billions of dollars into propaganda campaigns. He has put billions into it. If he didn't benefit from it, we had put billions into it. His propaganda is in our education system, our movies, when we think we've just been entertained. His propaganda is in our news reports to keep us demoralized. I don't speak from a defeatism. I don't speak for a sense of whining. I believe when you give people a true understanding of the system, this is how they develop counter strategies. The difference between fake knowledge and true knowledge is this. Fake knowledge keeps you mentally enslaved. True knowledge elevates your mind. Elevates, expands the range of your thinking. And once your mind is expanded, it never returns to the original size. We have to understand the system that's being used against us. The system that divides us. The system that's being used to protect white dominance. We must understand that system and see, counter strategies against it.
See, the problem that we have is, you're right, we don't understand it. You know, we go on with our mundane lives thinking that, yes, you know, this is the best that we can do. And so we just carry on individually.
Yeah.
Because yes, in this society, in European society, individualism is promoted. Individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. That's what you have in this kind of situation. That's why, to me, they're morally bankrupt. They have no legitimacy to talk about, you know, fairness and equality and human rights. And so they have none. They're a bunch of hypocrites, you know. And as a consequence, we follow suit with that because they have put a vice grip, or they have imposed these boundaries. They've imposed, yes, boundaries on our lives. They put a vice grip on our minds. And if you understand, yes, that tool, once you set the vice grip, you just can't pull it apart. You know, you just can't do it. But there's a knob at the end of the handle. And the knob at the end of the handle is symbolic of acquiring knowledge of self, infusing yourself with who you are historically, who you are culturally. And that gives you the strength, because as you continue to turn that knob, now the pressure is released and you can open the vice grip and see the Caucasian for who and what they are. But you don't challenge them because they suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe they're superior. And not a damn thing that you can say or prove that they're not, because there's a plethora of information already out there to prove that. But they ignore it. They dismiss it. You see?
Yeah.
And also, too, they suffer from what this Caucasian woman, Dr. DeAngelo, said. They suffer from white fragility. They're fragile. Yeah. When the situation was happening with Trayvon Martin and all the other things that were happening, she was giving these workshops to these Caucasian folks, and they were saying to her, no, I don't want to believe that. I don't want to hear that. We're good Christian people. Look what we've done to the world. Look at the value that we've given to the world. Look at the modernization we've given to the world. No, that's not us. We're not people who steal people's land and murder people and displace them. No, they don't want to hear it. They suffer from white fragility. Their egos are fragile. But even deeper, they also suffer from hegemony, European hegemony. What's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine. And they've gone around the world claiming everybody's stuff in the name of. When the European came out of that dark age, medieval age, land poor, resource poor, people poor, and the only light that was happening in Europe was in the western part of Europe, you know, with the Moors. Just like, yes, you said earlier, they taught them how to take a bath and get them damn animals out the damn castles and so forth.
Yes, and irrigation. They taught them irrigation also.
All that.
The Queen of England said that she was the queen. She was the cleanest woman in England, in all of England, having taken a bath twice a month. Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we used to learn the history. Also, for example, the history we've been taught, as I said, is a lie. Like, for example, when you ask the average person, why did they travel 8,000 miles to Africa to get slaves when they had Native Americans here? Wouldn't it have been cheaper, easier to just use the Native Americans? Now, the narrative that people would say, oh, the Native Americans refuse to work, that's untrue. Because when you threaten to kill someone's children, they'll work. When you kill your loved one, they'll work. And some say they knew the land too well. But that's untrue, because they didn't know the land well enough to win the war. The true reason why they went and got Africans, because the Europeans needed slaves with stronger immune systems. Because millions of Native Americans were dying
because of the diseases that they brought. Because of diseases, yes, that they brought.
Like syphilis, gonorrhea, those are also European diseases. But see, we've been given a false version of history that exalts them and conceals unflattering facts about them. Remember the British man said, history will be kind to us because we shall write it?
That's right. That's Winston Churchill.
Yeah. And that's what they did. So they imposed these narratives, a false reality that exalts themselves and have imposed it upon society. It's a form of mental abuse. But here's the deal. Our state is not all lost, because there's an inherent response within the human psyche. And that's what we're depending on to liberate. I'll explain this. When people learn what's being done to them, once they get a clear understanding of the danger they're in, out of a necessity to survive, they develop counter strategies to overcome that danger. The white society benefits by keeping us ignorant. But once our people gain an understanding of the system, out of the necessity to survive, this is the inherent part of the human psyche, you develop counter strategies. So our goal is to make our people understand that they're in a system. And because they're born into the system, they've normalized it. We were born into the system, passed it to us, and we normalized it. Like the most profoundly ignorant thing that billions of us do is defend a Bible. Now, here's the deal. When we defend the Bible, we are defending a Bible that our ancestors fought to reject. So our minds have been turned fundamentally against our own ancestors. The early white Christians conversion Africans, we know it had nothing to do with saving their souls so that Africans would join them in heaven in the afterlife. We know this to be a fact because the early Christians believed that Africans had no souls, Africans weren't human, and that heaven was for whites only. This is a fact. A speaker of truth is always hated. But this is a fact. The true reason was to indoctrinate the belief of a white God into the minds of the Africans. The Africans were taught that to put nothing before this white God. Don't put your children before this white God. Don't put your wife or your husband before this white God. So it creates an adoration towards whiteness. And this whiteness, this attitude of whiteness, subconsciously transfers towards white people. After all, white people are white. They're closer to God. So it created a sense where we became more subservient to them. And if you don't believe this is real, in 1969, Ebony Magazine published a cover with a black Jesus on the cover.
They got a lot of complaints. They got a lot of complaints about that, didn't they?
Yes. The mindset, African Americans said they were offended by seeing their Jesus depicted as black, offended by it. They wanted to see that Jesus white, and they were threatening to stop their descriptions because he was black. In fact, I had a neighbor years ago. You know, I had a painting of a black Jesus on. I know it's fictional now. I don't put it on my wall. But this lady was a minister, and a son was visiting my daughter, and he saw this black Jesus on a wall I painted, and it's years ago. So she came and she came to talk to me. She said, "I'm offended. My son said you had a black image on your wall," and it was amazing to see this black woman being offended by the thought of her so-called Messiah being black. You know, so this we have normalized this, but it's nothing normal about this state of mind that exists among our people. And let's pay attention. This state of mind among our people clearly benefits the white society. Whenever the oppressed thinks exactly as the oppressors wants them to, that's always by deliberate design. There are three ways to socialize, to manipulate the human mind: by what we're taught, what we see, and by what we hear. Because the white society controls the education we're taught, the media images we see, and the societal narratives that we routinely hear, they're able to socialize our minds without us even realizing it. We are being programmed and don't even realizing it. When you're watching the news, you keep seeing those negative stories of black people. You begin to feel, you don't realize this is happening on a subconscious level. You feel personally humiliated. You're being humiliated, all these negative things about black people. And now you start to resent your people. Then some of us want to disassociate ourselves from our people. Then others of us say, we need to go and show white people that we're not all the same. I got to show white people. We are being programmed and don't understand the programming. And what's the worst of our condition is we've been conditioned to believe the words are truth that come from those who have proven themselves as being history's most notorious liars.
Yes, they are. Brothers and sisters, you can join this conversation with me and Brother Franklin Jones, the Black People Matrix. For those who are already on, hit star twice. Hit star twice. For those who are listening, dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You know, this vice grip that these Caucasians have on our minds is serious. And they obviously, It is not in their interest for them to release
it. No, it's not. It's against their interest to free our mind. But I want to tell you something. We are more awakened than you would realize. I'm going to say why is this. Because they don't show the awakening. That's what Mendel was saying, that the liberation would not be televised. They're not going to show the awakening. You never hear the ideology of the awoke. On the media, they will always take the buffoonery. They'll always take the ignorance. And they will continue to amplify the ignorance. So we aren't able to get a full grasp of how much awake we are because the white man controls information. But we are awakening. We are truly awakening. And they know more than anyone else because they study us. Some of those so-called black pages on Facebook, they're white governor pages. They're monitoring our dissent. They're monitoring our words.
Well, everything, you know, even programs such as this, because they have control over mass media. They have control over the electronics. They have control over the information technology and so forth. And the other problem, of course, is that, just as you stated, those who have a strong voice, those who have an independent, self-determining, liberating, sovereign voice, they're not going to get a broad spectrum of listeners. That's just not going to happen, you know.
Yes.
But those who... Mm-hmm. Want to integrate, assimilate, act like
Candace Owens, they gave her own show. Gave Candace Owens a national platform.
Yeah.
You know Candace Owens, the sellout?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean,
but all of those, I mean, I saw a piece with Larry Elder recently. Yeah. So those individuals who are very Negroid in their behavior and in their thinking, you know, they'll get, you know, platforms, they'll get viewership, they'll get listenership, you know, they'll be consulted. You'll see them on CNN, you'll see them on whatever. Yes. And of course on Fox News, and of course the religious community, the Christian community specifically, you know, those individuals.
I'll tell you something, my brother. There's a black list that they have, where there are people on a list that can't be allowed on CNN, that won't be allowed on MSNBC. There is a deliberate effort to keep certain people from a national platform. And then there's something else they do is called dumbing down the rhetoric. When they have these programs and it says talking about black issues, and they invite rappers. They invite rappers and other celebrities.
Yeah.
What this does, this creates a setting for lively debate, but it keeps the dialogue dumbed down. So our people spend hours watching this lively debate, but there's no true knowledge being fed into your minds. We are in a system. Now, here's one thing that all self-hating blacks have in common. They believe that the narrative the white man says about their people are true. That's what they all have in common. They won't even think to question for themselves.
And then, of course,
his objective is to keep us believing the fraudulent worst about ourselves, because doing so demoralizes, divides, makes us self-loathing.
Yeah.
This condition prevents us from unifying against them, and it makes us easier to control. Dividing rules are going to for a long time.
Exactly.
Centuries. Exactly. Dividing rules.
That's what the so-called Willie Lynch piece was about. But the other thing is that you, to this day, there are some of us who firmly believe that we are our own worst enemies. When you break that statement down, number one, you got to understand what an enemy is. What is an enemy? Somebody who works against you, who's trying to destroy you, somebody who's trying to eliminate you. That's an enemy. But then you say we're our own worst enemy. There's no other enemy worse than us, than ourselves. Please, you know, stop it. You know. And so I hate it. But hold on.
Enemies, we call ourselves niggers.
Right.
While minds are programmed to think in a way that benefits the oppressors.
And I have some people and friends who espouse this, who believe this, you know. And unfortunately, you know, when I correct them, they're upset about it. But I don't give a damn, you know, because the reality is we must understand that I never put the blame on us. Never.
Yes.
I put the blame where it squarely belongs, on the perpetrators of that dastardly deed, the Europeans, the Caucasians, the white man, the cracker, whatever you want to call him. He's the one that has done this. I'm sorry.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing I always point out. I meet black people putting down their race. And I always point out, I say there's no black person on this planet who is able to quantify or validate his negative perceptions of his people based upon his own individual experiences. None, because it's not humanly possible to do so. Those negative perceptions were indoctrinated into his mind by white media controllers, white propagandists. And here's what happens. Here's what happens, how it imprisons the mind. Once you're programmed to believe something, you then only see those things that appear to confirm the programming, and you become psychologically blinded from seeing the things that refute it, okay? I'll give you an example. A man is made to believe that black women are all abrasive and angry. He goes to a barbecue and there are 50 black women there, and he sees one black woman acting that way. He'll say, see, that's why I can't stand black women. But he's psychologically blinded from the fact that 49s are not doing it. Or if a black woman is made to believe that most black men are marrying white women, she'll go through life, and everywhere she goes, she will notice those black and white couples that confirms her program belief. And but the greater number of black-on-black couples, she doesn't see. She becomes psychologically blinded from seeing. Once a belief has been embedded into the mind, you begin to only notice those things that appear to confirm the program belief. This is why those who have those negative beliefs of our race are so adamant. This is why they argue. But the reality is you are not able to quantify a negative assessment of people based upon your own personal perceptions. It's not humanly possible. Those negative beliefs have been indoctrinated into the minds of millions of black people by the whites who control our media images, who control our narratives, who control our statistics. They control our interpretation of ourselves, and they learned a long time ago that by negatively controlling what we believe about ourselves makes us more subservient towards them and more compliant with their white dominance over our lives.
Okay.
We're in a system that people need to understand.
We have a caller, 334, 334. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshie. And ma'am, I can't ask anything. Brother Jones, it's a pleasure to hear your voice, sir, and your reasoning. You know, there isn't anything that I don't think I can ask because of the fact that you've covered it. And when we talk about programming and propaganda and the creation of the narrative and manufactured consent, what you just last said was the fact that I think we need to, as a collective, get away from talk as it pertains to comparing us with other people. And so when we start this comparison of this group versus that group, we get sucked up. It's as though you just can't help but getting brought down the drain after the plug has been released. And so you've said it all, and it's a pleasure hearing your voice, and I just had to make sure that I was in on this discussion. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you, Brother Les. I appreciate you, man. All right.
I want to say something, and I want everybody to just think for a second, critically thinking. All narratives about black people come from white people. They control all of our narratives. They control our media image. If you don't believe that they're using this scenario in ways against our interests, if you don't believe that they've weaponized this scenario against us, you're a goddamn fool. Look at their history. What is it in their history that said they wouldn't use it against us? There's something called information warfare. They control the information, and they weaponize that information against us. By constantly telling us that they're better than us at everything, is being done to instill the myth of their superiority into our subconscious minds. By keeping us demoralized, it makes us self-doubting. It makes us more compliant with their white dominance. By vilifying our image, it creates a setting that manufactures societal consent for our mistreatment. White cops can routinely kill us and get off by saying they were fair for their lives. We are in a system, but it's real, and we have to understand it. Now, I would like to you, listeners, when you get a chance, go to YouTube and listen to, put up a video on Dr. Edward Bernays. He was the nephew of Sigmund Freud, who took Sigmund Freud's study of the mind for controlling the masses. There is a video called Century of Self also on the internet, and it shows how those who control information are able to control the recipient of the information. The white society controls information, and we black people are the recipient of the information. This is how they control us. But by studying and understanding their tactics, their information loses its ability to manipulate us. What should become aware of the system is how you liberate yourself from it. They're working on us. And they're planning to stand on our necks until we push them off. They're not going to get up because it benefits themselves. And the system that they have in place, they have it in place for our grandchildren and their grandchildren. The system is in place. Every generation has its purpose. Ours is to reveal the truth and reverse the brainwashing. And if we do it in this generation, we are at a unique place where we can save the lives of Africans who aren't even born yet. Teach our people about this system to free their minds. We must understand what's being done to us.
But see, the problem, of course, is that this is insidious. This is something that happens covertly, even though at times it is overt. And so we don't understand it. We don't understand the dynamics, and we don't understand what we're operating in. You know, just like Stevie Wonder, the great visionary, says, when you believe in things you don't understand, you suffer. And we are a suffering people because we don't understand the dynamics, the theology, the educational, the monetary, all of these systems that are designed to maintain and sustain the privilege that Caucasians have created for themselves. And to our detriment, we do not understand them. As a consequence, we follow suit, and it is to our detriment, you know.
Yes.
And the fact is that, just like Marimba Ani, and I read this quote all the time, to be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior. In order for us to understand the effect of Europeans have had on our ability, the effect that they have on our ability to think victoriously, we must be able to separate our thoughts from their thoughts so as to visualize a future that is not dominated by Europeans. This is a demand by an African-centered worldview. Why? Because we are African people. But more importantly, because of the future towards which Europeans leads us is genocide. These people want us off the planet. These people want us. I mean, when Francis Cress Welsing, no, let me go back here. When the Europeans began to venture out and take everybody's stuff in the name of, and then have intercourse with the inhabitants, which they encountered, rape, they realized and seen that the offspring did not look like them, which caused an innate fear in them of genetic annihilation. Francis Cress Welsing, in a presentation I heard here in Atlanta, she said that, you know, we're talking about this, and then suddenly it was like an epiphany. It hit her. It's like, wow, that's it. That's why, you know, they can be dominated. You know, Brother Lush, you got a question?
Yeah, real quick, and I didn't want to disrupt your thought. Brother Jones, then it begs the question, do we as people really understand what our demise could potentially be from these kinds and types of programmings?
Yeah, like we're saying, so many of our people don't know. So many of our people are totally clueless of it. And not only they don't know, they don't even know they don't know. So that's why the goal here is to make our people aware of it, how it's being done. We are being conditioned to accept white dominance. We are being socially engineered to be future slaves for the white society, while whites are being conditioned to believe that they're inherently superior. And this is all being done by social scientists. Society functions by these social scientists, and they're using it to maintain their white dominance. But
thank you.
But once our people gain a clear and accurate understanding of the system, change will come. but our people must gain an accurate understanding of it. And here's an analogy I use in terms of this. If you have a people on a sinking island, if they don't know the island is sinking, they'll be complacent. They will party. They'll do their thing. But if you show them that the island is sinking, you teach them it's sinking, the knowledge of learning that the island is sinking, they will go out and build canoes. They will build things as a necessity to survive. So I believe in a people's ability to be the change that they need once they're given the proper information. So once our people understand that their minds have been socialized and the socializing is continually being done, we will then resist the socializing. We will sit down with our children and talk to them what's really being done to them in their schools. We will watch the media and the news and talk to our children of what's being done. I'll give you a more recent example. The movie The Black Panther, I've talked about this quite a bit. When they made that movie, they know it's going to be seen by billions of black people. They know it's going to be seen all over Africa. And when you watch that movie, you will notice that the white man propaganda is deeply embedded at the core of the movie. In the movie, the villain is the African-American who wants to liberate his people. He's also the one that kills the black woman. So by vilifying his image, it also indirectly vilifies our black liberating ideology. White man's propaganda always embedded and spread to us as a people, and we don't realize it. And here's something. When you're watching a movie, it's called Alpha State. When you're watching a movie, it's not like when you're in a debate or an argument or the conversation where you're saying, I agree with this or I don't agree with that. When you're watching a movie, your mind is what's called an alpha state. You're just receiving information. And this allows information to be downloaded into the subconscious mind without you realizing it. I remember after seeing the movie, this woman was talking to me. She thought, hey, I hate Killmonger. I hate him so much. She hates the ideology of black liberation. Black people who don't critically think never notice their mental change.
Well, you know, that's interesting because Chadwick Boseman said that T'Challa was the real, you know, villain, the real enemy. It was not Killmonger. He was because of the fact that he did not open up the country to African people globally, did not utilize the resources they had to liberate African people globally as what Killmonger wanted to do. He said that I understood later after the movie and looking at it that character was the real enemy.
In fact, when Killmonger threw him off the cliff, I started clapping for him. I started applauding for Killmonger. I really felt that. When he picked him and threw him off, I applaud him.
But the reality is that we live in a reality dictated by Europeans. That's the reality. Mm-hmm. And a liberating mindset for African people and those who want to think about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. Unfortunately, that mindset is something that the European does not want to take hold because that is a deep challenge. And see, the thing is this, if we embrace that, you know, granted, we're going to have to defend that, of course. But more importantly, once we've embraced it, once we understand it, and more importantly, act on it, now the real liberation begins. But until that time, it's just some talk. Because, you know, just like I listened to Bibi Atumi, Baba Kamban and his son did a presentation this past weekend on African consciousness and awareness. But we did not put that consciousness into practice. We talked about it. We wore dashikis and galas and so forth, but we didn't change behavior. We didn't seriously challenge ourselves to be more African in our behavior, you see. And as a consequence, we can talk all we want. But if those who are still in control and dominating, then what does that mean? It means nothing. You know, it is the behavior that we're talking about here that needs to change for us to eliminate this mindset that we've been given, you know, and that unfortunately that we exercise on a daily basis that has us divided And of course, if you're divided, you will be conquered, you know.
I will tell you, I know we're not out of time, just real quickly. There was this brother named Gilbert Noble from back in the day.
Yeah, Gil Noble. Mm-hmm.
And here what he said about Malcolm X. He said, I was put off by Malcolm X. I didn't like him. He scared me and a lot of other black people. I'm mad enough to admit it. It's because we've been socialized as kids to never say the things that Malcolm X said and to never think as he did. Now, while I rarely ever quote someone who opposed Malcolm X, but I respect the fact that Gilbert Noble knew that his mind had been socialized. Mm-hmm. I respect that he was able to acknowledge that. Most black people have never heard of socialized. Most black people don't know that oppressors always socialize the minds of the oppressed. At least he knew that the reason why he couldn't stomach Malcolm X was because his mind had been socialized against Malcolm X. Our people must recognize that we've been socialized and it continues. It's unrelenting. It's being reapplied every day. We must overcome our socialized mind.
And see, and the problem, of course, is that there are some of us like myself who came up in the 60s as well and you know, was a member of the NAACP Youth Council. We're not a serious member, but I marched for open housing and those kinds of things. But I gravitated to Malcolm X, not so much to Dr. King. I gravitated to Malcolm X. I attended some Republic of New Africa meetings and so forth. So my mindset was there. And then when I came on the fire department, it was galvanized. I was really serious about African thinking and African liberation and so forth. You know, it has come to the point where I am today, where I am a diehard Pan-Africanist. You know, in fact, the motto of this program is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. Because it is my firm belief if we are to be a people, an independent people, or people who are not marginalized, who are not manipulated or undermined, we must have sovereignty. And it can't happen here, you know. And we keep begging and pleading with these Europeans to do right, act right, treat us with respect, allow us to be a part of your government, allow us to be a part of your school, allow us to be a part of the jobs you have. And we also want you to promote us within those jobs. Please, brother, we are begging.
There's 2 minutes left. So I'm going to say something, 20 seconds, I'll say something. The only way to fight the white man's propaganda is with counter propaganda. This means we who are listening, we must learn the truth and spread the truth. We are in a position right now, we have the internet. We can spread information to millions. Find your truth and share the truth. Share the truth. My webpage is www.theblackpeoplesmatrix.com. Go there and take information from there. I'm also on Facebook as the Black Matrix Reloaded. Take information that's freely available. I'm asking you to go there and share the information. Copy, learn it, share it. We must share it unrelentingly.
And I'll tell you, it's vitally important that we do that, because hopefully it'll touch somebody and then they will touch somebody and so forth and so on. But the thing is, we need to do that now. You know, our future is uncertain, you know.
Yes.
It truly is. Our future is uncertain with the technology that these people have and the mindset that they have. You know, that's why some of us are against the vaccine. Some of us who look at this pandemic has a plandemic, you know.
Yes.
And you know, although I've never espoused that or pushed that on this program, the only thing that I talked about on this program as it related to that is that people are dying. What do you need to do to protect yourself? That's what you must do, you know. Because,
yeah.
I mean, it's serious. But if you believe that a vaccine will help you, then that's what you believe, then you go ahead and do that. You know, but the reality is we got to know who we're dealing with. You know,
I'm
that these
the
people.
And let 10 more people get in front of me that I'll watch.
Yeah, you know, so that's what we must do, man. So, Brother Franklin Jones, once again, man, I appreciate it. We'll hopefully have you on again in the next few weeks.
It's a pleasure, my brother. Always a pleasure.
Always. It really is. Let's talk the next time we come back on the, you know, and I know this is a tough one for a lot of our people.
Yeah. Yes.
To talk about the theology that has been imposed upon us and how it prevents us from unifying. Because particularly Christianity, because Christianity is a individualistic religion, you know, that you're saved. I'm saved. I'm blessed and highly favored, you know, as opposed to the unity that we need. So we're going to talk about that and other subjects in months to come. Brother Franklin Jones, I appreciate it. The Black People Matrix, brothers and sisters, go ahead and get that.
Hold on.
Give that information out again of how on the website and on Facebook. Go ahead. Brother Franklin. Oh, he must have left us. I believe he did. Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm back.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was saying, get that information out again on the website and on Facebook.
Okay, great. www.blackpeoplesmatrix.com. At www.theblackpeoplesmatrix.com. Also, I'm the Black Matrix Reloaded on Facebook, and my name's also Franklin Jones. I have a page also on Facebook. All the information is there. All the information is free. Just take it and share it and learn it, please.
All right, I appreciate that, brother. Once again, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko: "The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed." This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell, damn it, don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bivahodie means our victorious destiny. And brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a wonderful day, family. Peace.